Well, I think any business people, I think, you know, again, I'm involved with some industry groups on the public relations industry, and this whole idea of sort of, you know, focus is really important. You know, the generalist firms are the ones that struggle the most. The focus firms were the ones that, you know, kind of were able to sort of maintain their relationships just because they really are able to add more value.
That's Jody Lowe. She's founder and managing director of the Lowe Group, a PR firm located in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. We're here to talk about her impressive highlights over her 30-plus year career and find out what she's learned and what lessons you can. I'm Andy Azinger. This is the Lowdown Podcast. Jody, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Well, the point of the conversation today is to really kind of take a walk back in time and step forward through your career, because there is an inspirational story in it, I think, both for your clients, potential clients, to really understand the word of the day is origin story. But let's just take a step back to some place that we have in common. You and I both worked for Strong Investments, which was a mutual fund company. Why don't you take me back to your start in Strong and capital management and where that fit in your career in the financial services industry?
Yeah, Andy, you and I met in the 90s, but I go back a little further. I started there in 1986, and this was my first professional job out of college. And it wasn't my first job in the financial services industry. I had actually worked at a community bank when I was in high school, you know, as a teller and a number of other roles. But it was my first real job. And I kind of was familiar with finance, given I had worked at a bank. I, you know, went through college thinking I was going to be a lawyer, studied political science and international relations, took a bunch of language, had a great liberal arts degree, but did not have any, you know, formal training in finance or any formal training in PR for that matter at that
Which
time.
Which made me a perfect fit.
Right. But I did end up landing at Strong, which in so many ways was such a blessing. It was a really intense deep dive education out of the gate. When I started at Strong at that time, it was so different. You know, the Schwab platform, the Fidelity platform didn't exist. Most individual investors, especially, you know, average everyday people, their investments were their IRAs, and they bought mutual funds, and mutual funds were the hot product. And you would call up your mutual fund and get a prospectus and invest directly. And Strong had some of the best mutual funds around at the time, and they were a growing firm. Their phones were ringing off the hook. When I started a few weeks before that, Strong had expanded to offering 24-hour service. This little company in the Midwest was trying to rival what Fidelity had just started doing with their 24-hour service. And so Dick Strong, our former boss, was really building a firm. I think they had only a couple of billion dollars at the time. I was employee number 35. When I left, I think I was, you know, there was like 1,400 employees or something like that. So it was on an upswing. The firm was growing. We were learning. You know, I started in a customer service job, and within 6 months, I was a team leader managing other representatives. I took my securities licenses, and it was just a total deep dive into the industry.
So how did you end up in PR?
Well, that's the funny thing. Dick and his then partner, Bill Corneliuson, would every year have a sit down with every single one of the employees. And I remember meeting with them at the old George Watts restaurant in downtown Milwaukee.
Wow.
And just doing, you know, conversation. And that first year would have been about 6 months into my career. Dick said to me, you know, you worked in politics, didn't you? And I had worked as a Senate page, and I had worked for a state senator when I was in college. And I had also had an internship in public relations. And, you know, he understood the value of public relations at that time. You know, putting your portfolio managers out there into the Wall Street Journal and getting a mutual fund mention in Kiplinger's or Money Magazine could really make the phones ring. And he knew the value of that, and he wanted to focus on the PR. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to create a role. And instead of going out and recruiting somebody, he sort of looked at my resume and said, hey, you've done some PR. You could do this. But he also sort of saw my curiosity. He knew I was a reader. So I basically learned from the ground up. I mean, I was the PR person. I was the one who took any incoming calls from media. I would do outbound calls to try to set up interviews, and it just started from scratch. And so I kind of buried myself in the media. I got, subscriptions to every publication, and then there was no internet, right? So I'd have stacks of periodicals. I'd take them home and I'd read them every night. I got to know who all the reporters were, total deep dive into media and PR. And at the same time, I was still kind of managing a team of representatives. And I think even at one point at that time, I took on some marketing responsibilities as well. We all wore a million hats. And I'm so grateful because I learned about so many things during those years.
Yeah.
And I'll just also point out, and I just want to mention this because it was formative to me. In my first year at Strong, October 19th, 1987, the stock market crashes.
Right.
And
Black Friday.
Right. Everybody was on the phones helping customers that night. And I remember, people were faxing sell orders and, calling, panicked, thinking the world was going to end. And, it was my first lesson in, not only behavioral psychology, but also a real, true, and powerful lesson about the way the markets work. Because lots of people panicked that day, right?
Yeah.
And we were all panicking. And I remember we had what Dick used to call group therapy. You'd get everybody in the company together, and we had a group therapy scheduled that next day. And we had that meeting, and we talked about what this means and, basically pulled everybody together. And within a week, we're moving into a brand new building. It was really a scary but also exciting time. But I remember while everybody's selling, many may remember Warren Buffett started snapping up values, right? It was the mm-hmm. best time in the world to be buying. Mm-hmm. And it was just mm-hmm. really a lesson about how the markets work, right? So, it was such a fascinating first year. And then, 16 subsequent years working there. I couldn't have asked for a better first job.
And how did you go about crafting your relationships with reporters and financial journalists at that time to ensure that they were hearing a human story versus a story that is just spectacular?
Such an intuitive question, Andy, because that sort of hits on something that I think is really, really important about anybody who works in media and media relations. You have to build relationships that last, and you have to, maintain relationships with reporters in both good times and bad. And when your firm is under fire, there's always a tendency to just sort of batten down the hatches and hide, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not taking that call. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in that article. I'm not talking to that person, right? There's totally that tendency. And I think going through this, and we faced other situations, at other times where we had to deal with some negative news. My experience was, listen, I can't I'm going to offer you a comment related to this, and we're going to give you a written statement. I'm happy to talk with you a little bit on background. I would never ignore reporters' calls. I would always respond to them. I may not be able to offer them an interview and just say, I'm sorry, we're not in a position to be able to offer an interview. We're going to have to decline to talk about that, but we can give you a statement related to the topic. So you have something you can use for your story. Mm-hmm. But, again, it's a matter of showing up and answering the phone and not just hiding.
So you had an opportunity to build a team. How did you start to build it?
So you're right, Andy. We had an opportunity to grow and expand. Our responsibilities for the corporate communications, expanded beyond just PR. We did some of our corporate sponsorship. We were involved with the firm's sponsorship of the circus train and other things that went on in the community. Events and things, right. So we added to our team. I remember bringing in one of the more senior, longstanding people at the firm who was very familiar with the culture to help organize our charitable giving and our involvement with the circus train. And then we regularly would tap people that were part of the Strong Start program, and people had a chance to rotate through our department. But I remember, you know, trying to find people that showed curiosity, that enjoyed working with the media, that understood that, you know, the process of public relations is, you know, unlike marketing, where you have a specific spend and a specific outcome that's going to happen. With public relations, you know, you put out a news release and you may or may not get a story, right? You put out a story pitch and, you know, not every reporter finds that newsworthy, right? So you need to have somebody who's really willing to go with the flow and understand the cycle and is responsive. You know, one of the things with reporters is they work on deadline, right? And they'll call and, you know, want to schedule an interview. And the people who really do well understand that, you know, their job is to make sure they get the reporter connected with the right person and set up the interview and make sure it happens and make sure the reporter has everything they need, right? And that it's seamless, not only for the reporter, but for the interview subject, right? So I find people who are very, you know, very responsive.
But what you brought to the table was being able to turn that story around into something that was going to paint a truthful picture that a reporter could actually use.
Yes. Right. Right. Yep. And you know, again, not everybody, if you're working like we do now as an external agency, we're not necessarily always going to be at the table, but it's really critical to spend time thinking about and reading about and doing a deep dive into what it is that our clients do. I mean, I do try to listen in on our clients' webinars. I do try to read their quarterly letters. I try to pay attention to interviews when I have a chance and read them and think about what their portfolio managers say and really absorb it and keep it, because I might need to be able to represent them in front of a reporter in the future and try to describe who they are. And I need to be able to understand them and explain it.
Was that something that you, when you were working with your team back in Strong, is that something you challenged them with as well?
Yeah, I think I tried to model that too. I mean, we all were deep readers. We were, you know, we attended all of the opportunities we could for speaker programs and learnings and education. And that's always been, you know, a key driver for me. And I've always encouraged everybody on my team to, you know, to really be learners, lifelong learners. And it's critical.
Yeah.
It's critical to the job, yeah, for sure.
Was there a particular moment that stood out for you? And after we hear from that, we're going to take a short break. But what was that story that stuck out for you that said, I am doing absolutely the thing I should be doing?
Oh, gosh, there's so many.
Take your time.
I remember we planned a media lunch one time in New York for January, which is a big time for reporters to sort of be thinking about the new year and economics. And we were bringing the leader of our bond team and the leader of our equity team and Dick. And I think we had, you know, three or four portfolio managers, and the weather's looking pretty bad. And so there's just no chance we're going to get out. But there's one Teterboro airport that's still open in New York. And we knew that if we get off the ground here, we'd be able to land in Teterboro, right?
Okay.
And the pilot starts coming in to land, and it's snowing like you wouldn't believe. And he comes down to the ground, and he touches down, and that plane is not slowing down, right? It just keeps going. And we're on the ground, and he pulls right back up again. And he says, we're going to try that again. Like, all of us are like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? He spins around, and we land. And we made it too. And it was really a great lunch. And it was, you know, it was super, you know, it was one of those kind of things. It was, you know, about the persistence of sort of trying to make things happen and then making them happen. And, and you know, it was one of those experiences that you can't, you know, you don't necessarily want to go through, but in the end it was, you know, very memorable. But I had so many good memories. There were so many good people. We had great relationships with reporters. And, you know, I have so many memories of sit downs with reporters and kind of learning about what they did. And the feeling of being able to successfully connect them with great sources was, you know, a key part of what I really enjoyed about my job.
Excellent. So the years that you spent learning and growing and developing really was a launch pad for you to, you know, help other financial service firms. And we're going to hear about how she translated all of those earlier experiences into today's experiences in a firm that dates back 17 years. So Jody, let's catch up in part two.
Yeah, that's good.
So, Jody, what inspired you to leave the position that you were in for 16 years and open your own business? Why?
You know, that was a really tough decision for me. Last few years at Strong, I, you know, had been there a really long time. I had been promoted to join what was called a leadership team. It was sort of a step down from the office of the CEO, but it was the kind of high level of the firm, selected leaders across the firm. And then each of us sort of took on more responsibility. So I assumed it was the leadership of our communications team, but I also assumed responsibility and oversight for our human resources and recruiting, and spent a year doing that while also being part of this kind of leadership management team. And it was really an honor and an interesting time. But what it made me realize is that my greatest value add was on the communications and media side. And that's what I really love to do. And I, of course, had done that at Strong for many, many years, really focused more narrowly just on our company. And it was, for me, a time to sort of think about what I really loved and what I was good at. And I took the opportunity to go out and build my own company to do just that.
Well, what was it? What was it like in the early days of building your business?
Well, I continued. It was really an interesting challenge because Strong was my first client, right? I left, but I didn't really leave. I continued to do the work basically with that I did on the inside, but I was on the outside representing Strong, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, again, I had a couple of other project-based clients that came up, and I started building a few things through people who knew me. And there was, you know, small local announcement. But about a year into it, I realized that I really hadn't left, right? I was still doing the same thing I was doing, spending all my time on Strong stuff. And so I left completely. And it was at that point that I landed a couple of bigger key clients.
And how did you find those clients?
Well, they knew me from my work in the industry, right? So they knew I'd gone out and they had these needs and they knew that we'd been successful doing public relations for Strong and they wanted to do something similar for their own fund groups. So my first clients were mutual fund clients. So they were firms that had mutual fund families and they were portfolio managers, top performing funds, new product launches. And actually some of those clients are still with me today. But interestingly, and Andy, you can remember this as well, Strong faced a crisis in 2004 or so, or 2005, and ultimately the company was sold. But at that time, many of our former clients left and went on to other firms. And, you know, the sad loss of Strong in our community was in some ways a gain for the low group because many of those people landed at other firms across the country and they hired us. So over the years, you know, we got a lot of new business and from former colleagues of ours at Strong who were terrific people and went on to build and have great careers in the industry. And either they or people they knew ultimately ended up, you know, coming to the low group for our services because of our reputation.
And not long after you started your firm, the country hit another crisis, the financial crisis.
Yeah.
Right. How did that affect you?
That was so interesting. You know, again, this is such a great example. And I think I would put 2020 in that world too. It was a financial crisis driven by, you know, kind of an economic event in 2008, 2009, and a pandemic in 2020. many of our clients, you know, were really at the heart of what was going on. They were either strategists and understood what was happening, or they were investors in spaces that were affected by the financial crisis. And we were able to build some really, really good relationships by being accessible during that time. Mm-hmm. You know, there were so many people, again, that did not want to, you know, have their name out there associated with tough financial markets, right? But the really smart people understood that they could provide some insights that were helpful to people and that could help explain it. And as a result, they built not only good relationships with reporters, but enhanced their brand by being smart, reasonable, level-headed experts who were offering helpful advice and guidance to people to get through this time. So that was my first lesson, is that, you know, we didn't hide.
That sounds like a, you know, one of the many critical decisions that you've made then that changed the direction of your firm. What other critical decisions have you made that changed the direction of your firm?
Well, I think ultimately I realized that I wasn't going to just be a sole practitioner. You know, when I first started the business, it was me and I did everything, right? I was representing our clients. I did all the plans, but I realized that if I was going to grow, I needed to build a team and recruit and bring other people on. And I think that was a really critical decision to decide that, you know, I wasn't just going to have a small consultancy that was going to be just me. I was going to try to, you know, bring along other people and build an organization that that could serve, you know, multiple clients. The other thing too that's sort of interesting is that, you know, the media world has changed really dramatically, right? You know, in the old days, the Wall Street Journal had four sections and it was thick, and there was a full column on a daily basis dedicated to mutual fund investing, right? Now you're lucky if, you know, once a month there's a, you know, a couple of articles on mutual funds. It's really a very different world, and everything's gravitated towards the internet. We also segued our business to provide a number of other services beyond public relations. Many of our clients still really come to us because they would like to get into the media. They'd like to have their experts quoted in the news. They want to get on CNBC. We do that for most of our clients. But a number of our other clients also are creating their own thought leadership. They may be writing a blog. They may be creating case studies. They may have interesting videos and things like that. So we've grown to help our clients on thought leadership and content. We have a staff that is, you know, financial writers, they're former journalists, MBAs, people who understand the financial world and can write with authority about financial topics and get it pretty close to write on behalf of our clients. And then we've also added a social media piece. Increasingly, our clients are connecting beyond media through social media, or they may get an article in the media and they want to leverage it on their social media sites as well. So we've enhanced our ability and our skills there. So those are some critical things that we've done to continue to evolve our services to meet today's media landscape.
And those are services that, you know, any PR company is going to need to have, you know, really to stay with the times, I should say. Mm-hmm. What distinguishes the Lowe Group? What are your clients like most?
Right. A couple things that I think we've heard over time. Number one, we're so focused on the financial services industry. We work with asset managers, mutual funds, registered investment advisors, broker dealers, service providers to the industry. They don't need to explain their business to us. We know their business. So, you know, they get right to the heart of what it is that they're trying to do, and they don't need to waste time trying to educate us. So that helps us, and they really like that. Mm-hmm. Then two other things I think make a difference. You know, again, on the media side, our deep and longstanding relationships with the reporters, we really do know the financial media pretty well and understand, you know, the key players and publications. There's a sense of hustle. People know that we're responsive. You know, we get stuff done. We keep things moving. We've got a great project management approach that keeps the priorities in front of our clients and keeps progress towards those priorities. And you know, again, when an opportunity comes up, we move quickly to take advantage of it, and we're responsive, right? They know that if they reach out to reach us, they're going to hear back. So that hustle is a real critical thing. And I think the last thing I'd say is that, you know, we work really hard to sort of become an extension of our clients' teams. You know, we want to sort of understand the ethos of who they are and what they're trying to do. We want to sort of anticipate, we don't want to feel like we're just sort of an outsourced worker, right? We are definitely somebody who they feel care about them and are part of their team. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times our clients will come to me and talk about how much, you know, they like working with the staff, and that they feel like, you know, that I remember one of our clients saying, you know, I'm going to need to get key man insurance on, you know, on your colleague. And that's true. I mean, he became such a key part of what they were doing, and he was responsive and really helped them. You know, that they felt like if he wasn't there, it was going to be a problem for them.
So would you say it's really important to be known for something?
Oh, I think any business people, I think, you know, again, I'm involved with some industry groups on the public relations industry, and this whole idea of sort of, you know, focus is really important. You know, the generalist firms are the ones that struggle the most. The focus firms were the ones that, you know, kind of were able to sort of maintain their relationships just because they really are able to add more value.
It's been really interesting to get to know you better on a very personal level. And before we go, we're going to have a little fun with that, with some rapid fire questions.
I'm in.
You in? Okay. Yeah. All right. And here they come. What's your morning routine?
Apple Watch goes off at 5 a.m. I brew my coffee and read the Wall Street Journal news email, get maybe, you know, half an hour in on a project of some sort, a little bit of work, jumpstart the day, prioritize the day. And then I generally work out. I'll either run or I'll do yoga or I'll lift weights or something like that. But I exercise every morning.
And what's your favorite free time activity?
Reading.
And what are you listening to? What's your favorite podcast?
Oh, I have too many in my podcast feed right now. I love the Fresh Air podcast because they've got just a variety of artists and authors and things like that.
Yeah, Terry Gross is so good.
I love Terry Gross. I also like Freakonomics. You have econ major in the financial services industry. Freakonomics always gets me thinking. Stephen Dubner does Freakonomics. Stephen Levitt has another podcast called People I Mostly Admire. I like that podcast too. It's fun. So sorry, I gave you more than one, but I'm listening to a number, and those are some of the top ones right now.
Well, you got to have a few in your queue. And any book recommendations?
I just recently watched Wolf Hall, the Wolf Hall series, and this is both a book and a TV recommendation, but the Wolf Hall series, Hilary Mantel's trilogy on Cromwell, is just an outstanding series. Long slog read, but the Wolf Hall BBC series was fabulous too. So that would be my most recent
Fantastic.
Recommendation.
Given the length of your career, do you have a favorite PR buzzword?
This isn't a buzzword, but it's a word that we use quite frequently. But this word salience is important. Like, you know, you can use a word, but what does it mean to the person you're trying to reach? The words you should use should cause the person you're trying to reach to nod their head, and they're right with you, right? So they're the pain points for them, or you're addressing a topic that they're interested in, and it's salient, and it causes them to have an emotional reaction and nod their head. So to me, if we're communicating effectively, and if our clients are communicating effectively, their clients are nodding their heads.
Well, at the very least, Jody, looking back over your career and looking forward, has been salient. And
gosh, thank you.
So there will be a lot of heads nodding as people are listening to this. So, but let's take the opportunity again. You've been listening to Jody Lowe, head of the Lowe Group, and we just want to thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks, Andy. This was a lot of fun.
And if you'd like to learn more about the Lowe Group, visit lowecom.com. That's lowecom.com. And you can stay up to date by listening to The Lowdown, both the podcast and the blog. I'm Andy Azinger. Thanks for joining.